Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Soul in Sports with Mike Knox and the crew. But you may say, Mike Knox and the crew, but who is this on the microphone right now? Well, guys, you should already know. It's me. It's the guy you know as M.E. Don't forget to follow me on the Twitter, M.E. Richmond on the Twitter. And just like good pitchers, I throw no hitters. You already know me. I don't chill, and I do not have any chill. I know it says no chill, but you want to know something? I say it does not have any chill because I like to use proper English. And you want to know something about that, folks? Mike Knox is on assignment right now, and so my assignment is to make sure that I give you the best darn sports coverage there is. Yeah, I know there's some other programs and some other people out there that think they know what they're doing, but they're not me. Okay, I'm calm. I'm chill, okay? But you got to go ahead and do the particulars. 347-637-3859 is the number of call. Again, you're tuning in right here to the Soul in Sport, 1040 AM and 96.9 FM in Hopewell, Virginia. We are doing it, and doing it well. Hey, fantastic show for you today. Gotta know, your March Madness bracket. We asked the question, what is the bracket anyway? What do you even care about your bracket at this point? Are you just in to watch the games now? Because my bracket stinks. Gosh. But we have a Final Four. We have Loyola, Chicago. We have Loyola, Illinois, Michigan, Villanova, and Kansas. So we have two number ones, a number three, and a number 11 seed here for our national championship of Division I men's college basketball. Gotta ask you, so out of these four, who you seen that national championship game? You know, let me tell you something. My bracket was that had Michigan in it is all jacked up, and my bracket that had Kansas in it was all jacked up. Well, actually, it wasn't that jacked up until recently. My Villanova bracket is darn near perfect with how I called out Villanova, and we already know Loyola, Illinois has destroyed many of people's brackets. So, with that being said, who do you got out of your Final Four? Also, because LeBron James, there we go. Because it's LeBron James, and everyone, you know, is suckles at the teach that is LeBron James's basketball IQ, his basketball ability, everything that he's done for the NBA as far as a sport and making it a global sport, even more global dominant, as far as just his outreach and his influence. We asked the question, current Cavs team that's constructed, can anyone beat the Cavs in the East? You may want to bring this up that the Cavs are currently number three in the East, behind the Boston Celtics, who we know have Kyrie issues because Kyrie has his leg issues, has his injury issues, and the Raptors, who Raptors seem to be a big thing. It's got the 54 wins, and they're looking good. They're looking like they know how to play, and there's certain things that they've been known for, you know, a certain word that I know there's some people out there who don't like to use that word. You know, they think it's a simplification of what actually happens in the course of a game. But I'm just saying, it could be apropos for this team and all the things that they have done up to this point. We'll get into that a little bit later. Also, we have some recent things that go on in our country. People are very, very split on certain issues when it comes to those who have Second Amendment rights, those who want to have stricter enforcement of laws already on the books, add some new laws to create an environment where they feel safer from people who may suffer from gun violence on a massive level. I can tell you where I feel about that a little bit later, whether yay or nay or where I stand. But because of this piggybacks off of some other things that have happened, of course, over the last couple of years when it came to the NFL protests, when it came to some other sports athletes protesting with the basketball players. We've had a lot of social justice demonstrations in some way, form, or fashion from our major athletes. You know, you have to ask yourself the question, and we got to ask you here the question, someone in sports, you know, sports versus politics. What do we have room for both? Is it possible that both can coexist? So, with that being said, you already got the particulars, 347-637-3859. Press 1 if you want to go ahead and talk and have a conversation with me, that guy that you know, SME. Hey, look. Let's go ahead and dive right into it, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go ahead and dive right into it right now. My original Final Four, was, in fact, Duke, Villanova, Virginia, and yes, I did have, out of that bracket, I did have Michigan coming out of that West. So I personally thought that Michigan was going to beat us, so I was right on that. I thought that Villanova was going to be there. I was right on that. I thought that Duke was going to be there, not Kansas, because I always think that at the biggest moments, Kansas chokes. So I personally thought that Kansas was not going to be there, but I got proven wrong. Duke fell before they had a chance to beat Kansas, in my opinion. Excuse me, they fell to Kansas, not had a chance before fighting Kansas. But they fell to Kansas, so I thought I was wrong on that. And I had no idea. No idea. That Loyola, I don't even know who these people are. If they didn't put Illinois by their name, I would not know where they were from. I don't know who these people are. I don't know who they are. But, you know, listening around and talking to the guys, you know, one analyst was like, hey, it's UVA. No, it's not. It's Loyola. No. It's just UVA with different colors because they structure their game very much like UVA. Pack line defense, very much in your face, make sure that you force you to the worst shot possible and all that. But, guys, is it wrong for me to believe, to not believe in an 11 seed? Is it really wrong for me to not think that an 11 seed can actually do something of impact and something of note in the NCAA tournament? Oh, yeah. Look, think about the teams that they played and the teams that they ran through, okay? One, they didn't have to play UVA, so they didn't have to play the number one, which was most arguably the number one defense in the country. They didn't have to play them. Their first game was against Miami, okay? Yes, Miami comes from the ACC. Yes, ACC is arguably one of the best basketball conferences, if not for the last few years, the best basketball conference in the nation when it comes to just the competitiveness that they have. I thought they weren't going to get past Miami, so they got past Miami. Cool. All right, that's an upset game, 6-11, didn't think much of it. Tennessee, who showed that they had a better team this year, who showed that they were doing well and that they were actually trying to compete in the upper levels of the SEC, which, you know, that's usually just Kentucky territory. It's just Kentucky territory, SEC, oh, well, who do we care about? but they were actually competing, and they were actually looking good. That's why they were a 3 seed. And I thought Loyola wasn't going to get past them. I was like, okay, cool. Loyola got past them. And then we see the comeback, the 22-point comeback that Nevada had against Cincinnati. And I said to myself, okay, my bracket's already destroyed at this point. You know, let me go ahead and make my pick properly. And you want to know who I picked that time? I picked Loyola. Because I did not want to think that a Nevada team who sat there and suffered all the stuff that they suffered through, all that turmoil and stuff, was going to have it at the end of the game. But you want to know something? I actually got that right out of luck, because Nevada and Loyola went toe-to-toe, went down to the last, to the wire, and Loyola edged them out just really by 1 point. But really, really, the people that I did not expect to see here was Kansas State at this point in that region. And surely enough, Kansas State beat the one team who I thought that Loyola was going to have to play them to get to the Final Four. They weren't going to beat. And that was Kentucky. So somehow Kansas State beats Kentucky, and somehow Loyola ends up playing against Kansas State and comfortably gets to the Final Four. That is crazy to me. So in my opinion, outside of really dealing with Nevada, their last game was ghost. And now they're going to play a Michigan team who, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't heard a lot of talk about this Michigan team. It's almost like people are like, meh, for Michigan. Everyone's talking about Loyola, Chicago, Loyola, Illinois, and all the awesome stuff that they've done, all the awesome things that they've continued to do and build that franchise up. And they talk about the 90-something-year-old lady who got her own special Jordans, things like that. All this stuff about Loyola, Chicago, but no one's going to really respect to Michigan. I can't wait. When we get our on the calls, man, we're going to make sure that we have discussion about that when it comes to if Michigan's getting respect. Now, who am I perfectly fine with having in the championship game? I have Villanova and I have Michigan. Of all the things Loyola has been able to do, I still don't believe that they have played the best talent of the tournament. I don't believe they played the upper tier talent of the tournament just yet. I think Michigan has an upper tier talented team, and that when they play them this weekend, they're going to realize on March 31st, when they play them, they're going to realize who the Rock is, because the Rock is going to roll up on them and say, it doesn't matter what your name is. It doesn't matter that you're Loyola. It doesn't matter that you're a Cinderella team. When it comes down to the Final Four, experience and good coaching always trumps your little Cinderella story, okay? So, but hey, maybe Loyola can take this after they lose against Michigan. Maybe they can go ahead and take this and do what Butler did. You know, Butler was almost a Cinderella story. They were really coming up, and they made their headway to the national championship game and beat Duke on and lost against Duke on a missed shot. Right? Hey, they got there, and they got there back-to-back years, and so they became a staple in the tournament. So now people are expecting to see a Butler. Maybe now, from the next few years, we can expect to see Loyola. However, I don't see them getting past Michigan. So Villanova and Kansas. There's been some study that whoever wins this game usually wins the national championship. And honestly, Kansas and Bill Self, you know, very consistent, always usually have some great, great teams, great star players, things like that. You know, they beat Villanova to go on to win the championship, but then Villanova beat them to go on to the championship. Seems like the winner of this particular game, if they were to meet an NCAA tournament, usually goes on to win the championship that year. But it's only been really a recent type of history thing, so can we really use that and rely on that to be able to determine everything else that we have to do? I don't think so. So, excuse me. Let me go get a sip of water here. Gotta be able to have that sip of water, man. That thing gets your throat dry. So, here we are. We have Villanova. We have Kansas. I personally believe that Villanova has a more mature team, a more mature squad to be able to handle everything that Kansas is going to throw at them. Also, I think that Villanova has a little bit more of a battle-tested bracket. And this is just me. This is just me. Let's see. They blew past Radford. That wasn't going to be anything. I thought Alabama was going to give them somewhat of a run for their money, but that didn't happen. West Virginia, I thought it was going to give them a run for money, but that didn't happen. And I didn't believe in Texas Tech at all. So you put that against what Kansas had to go through. Kansas played Pennsylvania. We already knew how that was going to happen. Then they played Seton Hall. Seton Hall, a little bit of a tougher team. Then they played Clemson, a little bit more of a tougher team. And then they played against Duke, which is definitely, and they went to overtime to be able to handle that. And it took one guy, only one guy, to be able to score all the points they needed to be able to beat Duke in overtime. So, as far as the two who are more battle-tested, I would say Villanova, Kansas is more battle-tested than Villanova, but I think Villanova has a more complete overall team to be able to pull this out for the NCAA tournament championship. Not only will they beat Kansas, but they're also going to beat Michigan, and that's my pick for the national champion. Now, let me tell you how many times this national champion changed. First I had UVA. I'm a Virginia guy. Wanted to see some good things from Virginia and Tony Bennett. They did a fantastic job this year. Number one defense in the country. Held some of the most prolific scoring teams to under 60 points. They did what they were supposed to do. And of course, just like the tournament, it could happen. But, man, you got to feel real bad for them because they lost to the 16 seed, the first ones to do it. Not only the first ones to do it, but they lost to the worst possible 16 seed as our Wally Wow, who is our correspondent here when it comes to basketball. So it was the worst possible 16 seed they could have lost to. It's a shame. A shame, really. So I had them first. Then all hell broke loose when it came to that. Then I picked Kentucky. I was like, okay, Kentucky's going to go ahead and beat Duke in a national championship game. Then Kentucky lost. Okay, great. So I said, okay, let me change this again. Now it's Duke. Okay, Duke's going to be fine. Duke's going to get to the national championship. They're going to end up going over. I literally had them go over Michigan in a national championship game. Then they lost. So now it's Villanova. Villanova's my pick to go over. It seems like everyone I pick to go to the national championship game lost. If this streak continues, that means Villanova may actually lose. Oh, man. So I hope that streak does not continue. I would like to make sure that I am not some kind of Chris Collinsworth where I put a kibosh on people. We got some kind of kiss of death. So, yeah, I don't want to do that. So, it's what's going on with NCAA, and that's my brackets. So, moving on to the Eastern Conference. Can anyone beat the Cleveland Cavaliers? And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I think that, well, let me tell you, I'm going to be honest. I don't believe, until I see it for myself, I refuse to believe that the Toronto Raptors, comprised of DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, Cleveland Cavaliers, even though the Cleveland Cavaliers have new faces on their squad and they battle-hardened people. You know, they have the Larry Nance Jr., they have the Jordan Clarkson who just got there, you got Rodney Hood and George Hill who just got there. You know, Kevin Love's been there before, LeBron James been there before. You know, Kyle Korver's been there before. Tristan Thompson's still there. He's been there. He knows how to take care of stuff, you know. But my thing is this. If that is the case, then it would have to be Kyle Lowry actually stepping up to the plate and actually making headway, actually doing what he needs to do in order to beat the Cavs, because it can't just be DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan is already the points leader on that team, scoring an average of 23.4 points a game. And with their 54 wins, when you watch the games, you know, you see good ball movement. You see some of the things similar to Golden State Warriors when it comes to just moving the ball, getting around, making sure you have the open shooters and things like that. But I cannot believe in Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Jonas Valanciunas, Serge Ibaka, and C.J. Miles. I mean, I'm granted all their starters average at least double digits a game, the lowest being 10 points, the highest being 23 points. But can you really say, after all these years, after chance, after chance, after chance, after having a team that was not only healthier than the Cavs, but was able to beat the Cavs because when they were at home, good gosh, you saw what happened, right? When they were at home, they did their thing. When they were not at home, they did not do their thing. So, yeah. So, if it's going to be the same thing this year, then all the Cleveland Cavaliers have to do is just make sure that they do their thing at home. and then they steal one game. All they got to do is steal one game. So the Toronto Raptors, for as good as they are away, they still have to deal with a seasoned veteran in LeBron James and Kevin Love, who know how to beat teams on their home court. Remember how undefeatable Golden State was when their 73-win season? Well, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love at the time were balled out, and they made sure they got at least one game. And Golden State, oh, but here's the thing. It went seven games, didn't it? So not only did they have to get one, they got two games in Golden State to make sure that they actually won that series. So it is not far-fetched that LeBron James and Kevin Love being the premier veterans on that team. Yeah, you got Shumpert and Smith that's still on there, but really they're just there. I mean, let's be honest. They're not contributing to a level where it's going to be conducive to actually being productive and helping their team be successful. Okay, so I feel this is just how I feel. I feel that's going to be the case when it comes to this as well. I don't see this. I don't see the Cleveland Cavaliers losing to the 76ers. 76ers, they give them a run for their money for like 2 seconds. I don't see them losing to the Wizards. I don't see them losing to the Bucks, the Heat. As the current Eastern Conference comprised right now, Raptors 1, Celtics 2, Cavaliers 3, 76ers 4, Pacers 5, Wizards 6, Bucks 7, and the Heat 8. So we're looking at currently their first round matchup will be a 3-6 matchup for the Cavaliers against the Wizards. Yeah, they're going to win that one. If they somehow creep up and get 6 or 7 wins and Celtics slip up and they get the number 2, they start out with the Bucks. Yeah, they have some issues with Giannis, the Greek freak, but they don't really have that much issue with it. It is the East. There's a reason why LeBron just hasn't left the East yet. It's because the competition there, while it's stiff and professional, is not really to the same level and caliber as what we have been getting in the West. Even with the dominance of the Golden State Warriors, they still have to actually try to beat a lot of these teams in the West. Cavaliers, which most of the season, especially in January, where you just see them coast and just don't care. That's when you see them definitely lose the most games. So let's be honest with ourselves about this. We don't see this as anything hard for the Cleveland Cavaliers to go ahead and put themselves through. I think it's going to be a cakewalk. It's going to be fine. All right. So I want to get into this other topic. Sports versus politics. Is there room for both? Is there room for both? So you have to ask yourself this question. Is there really room for politics and sports? I'm not going to give you a yes or no answer, because the only answer, in my opinion, is really yes. Sports and politics don't have to be mutually exclusive. At the same time, there's a way for you to mesh them together where it's palatable for the consumption of those who you serve from the audience standpoint when it comes to the sports aspect. For example, you didn't see people or hear people talking about they're going to turn off their screens and turn off their devices and turn off their TVs when players in the NBA decide to wear "I can't breathe" shirts, or when a recorded private conversation that leaked out from Donald Sterling had the LA Clippers at the time, who were comprised of Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin, when they were the main three there, when they wore their jerseys inside out. And they still played the basketball game. They still did what was correct for business. It was part of their contracts, but they did not want to, show that they were supporters of the organization from a solidarity standpoint. We see a less palatable example of sports and politics where we saw one Colin Kaepernick be the first, not subsequently less, but the first to take a knee during the national anthem. At first, he wasn't taking a knee. He was sitting down, and I have my speculations about the exact reason why he was sitting down and what he transitioned it into. However, what has been covered and the facts of the situation is exactly what it is that he was sitting down and taking knees because of the national anthem, because of police brutality. The original purpose was because of police brutality. All right? So let's fast forward this to something more recent. Now, a lot of people may not know this. It was in the news. It was covered. But here's what has happened, okay? England Patriots, the New England Patriots, actually donated a plane, actually donated their plane to people who wanted to who wanted to be a part of the March for Our Lives protest march. That is a pro gun control type of march. And so what's special about this particular thing, and I kind of want to develop it, what was special about this, in my opinion, was that, you know, an NFL team, not at the behest of Roger Goodell, not at the behest of NFL offices, but, you know, it was purposely done by this one particular team, which I believe every franchise should have the freedom to be able to debate and do whatever they want to specifically for their own franchise, and it shouldn't be an NFL governing body rule, just like it shouldn't be an NBA governing type rule when it comes to certain things like this. They chose to back people who were anti-gun, and there's a very simplistic way of saying they want actual more gun legislation, because there's a diverse group of thought when it comes to people who are anti-gun, okay? There's some people who are just no guns, period. There are some people who are just certain kind of guns should be banned. There are some people who are saying, well, you know, this AR-15 should be a gun that's banned, but I'm cool with handguns, cool with shotguns, things like that. And everyone has their argument about the factual basis of things. I can tell you where I feel about it in a second. But I wanted to point out how the New England Patriots backed up people who were on the anti-gun side. And I am perfectly fine with an NFL team, NBA team, Major League Soccer, whatever team wants to support the cause that they want to support, I am perfectly fine with. However, we are in a capitalistic free market society in which businesses have to take risk in order to create capital. Well, the politics versus sports, you have to ask yourself, how would this affect our bottom line? Now, I personally don't know the politics of the Boston area. I personally don't know the politics of Massachusetts all the way. I do know they're a heavily Democrat state. I don't necessarily know if they have heavy gun laws or gun legislations. I don't know that. What I do know is I find it interesting that one NFL team decided to go ahead and put their neck out for that, and it just happens to be the New England Patriots, one of the most untouchable franchises in sports when it comes to something that can happen like this. Because remember, Tom Horatio Rodriguez Brady had a MAGA hat in his locker. It's been put on blast that he had a real MAGA hat in his locker, so he obviously was a Trump supporter, and it blew off like it was nothing. No one even made, you know, it wasn't a big news story, it wasn't a big thing. But, you know, I thought I want to bring that out into light, because a lot of times this topic can get very, very deep, and not all voices are really heard in this, but I want people to know it's okay that they did this, and it would have been just as okay had they took knees or they sat down or did something for Black Lives Matter protest, or they did something for anti-fascist protest, or any kind of thing they wanted to protest or debate. It would have been perfectly fine as long as they understand what they want to do for their particular franchise. So right now, I want to bring in the guy who's the flagship, who coaches me up on how to be not as fat as him, because I've seen him eat, but, you know, but he helps me out. He gets me there, you know. So this is one, Mike Knox. We talking about sports versus politics. Is there room for both? And I am on the opinion side that it is okay that both are, you know, a part of what we do. That it's a part of what we do, it's part of who we are, it's part of our culture. It is okay for sports and politics to be together. It's just how it's delivered. You know, when you get delivery, you want some good delivery. You don't necessarily want DiGiorno. You want good delivery. And you want to make sure that your delivery ain't fake. So I'm just saying, I think it's something that's right and correct with the world when you do it the right way. So if this works, that this should work. I'm having some technical difficulties here. I hate when I have technical difficulties. Mike Knox, can you hear me? Mike Knox, can you hear me? He can hear me. I don't think his microphone is on. Let me see if I can do this. Let me see if I can fix this. Let me see if I can fix this real quick. Because to know what the man with the master plan, and we don't call him Stan, and I think you better recognize, because his name is spelled with three X's, because he is hardcore. Let's get this going here. But that's what we're talking about. As I adjust and get this ready, adjust and get this thing ready right here, because as always, technical difficulties be happening, but that's okay. We still be rapping in. So, as I said, we're talking about sports versus politics. Is there really any room for both? Is it possible that both can coexist together? And again, I want to just reset what I said. I'm okay with it, Mike Knox, being together. I'm okay with it being together as part of our culture. It's long-standing part of our culture. It's almost like a tradition where we can mix it to. I believe, though, how it's delivered to the audience, it makes the difference of whether or not it's properly received by the audience. What do you think, Mike Knox?
I think there's got to be room for both, because we live in America where, unfortunately, whether you choose to subscribe to it or not, it's in your face. You know, athletes every day, whether, you know, in our community, the black community, and what happens here, and, you know, this brother shot or that sister shot or that person going to jail or that person going to jail, it needs to be told up, because as much as, you know, we may make fun of LeBron James on this level, or we may, you know, make fun of Draymond Green on this level, the NBA is very good at being social or conscious, shall I say, of what actually is actually going on in politics, and meaning not talking about necessarily your president of your United States kind of politics in that sense, but more in the sense of communityism politics as far as the legislature is concerned and the laws that don't quite fit us the way they should fit us. You know, we say this isn't for us or that isn't for us. And it's important to know what's going on. It's important to know these laws. It's important as athletes to speak out against what's going on in this country.
Well, Mike, I hear that, and I understand that, and I have no problems with it. Here's my question. Do you think that every athlete's voice is as valid? So, for example,
there's some people who
when Colin Kaepernick came out and said the things that he said, there were some people who immediately, because, you know, we're in the social media age, they immediately start digging into his past, and one of the first pictures they saw was a happy-go-lucky, Brady Bunch-like, you know, middle-class white family. And there was black people and white people on the other side like, how dare you talk about police brutality as if you've been through something when you look like that and you were raised by a family that looks like that? How can you possibly relate to what I was doing? Versus like a LeBron James, if he was to make that same comment, well, he was an Akron. We know he's been through something.
Well, first of all, I thought the people that spoke out against Colin Kaepernick in the first place was ignorant, because just because he was raised and adopted, rather, by a white mother, his father's still black, still was raised in a black community. So so-called pro-black need to just stop the whole nonsense of, well, if you're not 100% all black or from Akron, Brooklyn, or, you know, the hood of Chicago, Philadelphia, then you're not black. That's just stupid. That's just straight up stupid and ignorant to the fact. And the world we live in today, unfortunately, the mulatto, as they refer to, the mixed baby, the mixed race that we have of children, black and white, will be the leading cause of this country in a few years. So President Barack Obama's not 100% African American, but you still want to refer to him as your first black president. What's the difference here? So I think, no.
Well, I always say that President Obama was the first legit African-American ever, like, because his dad was literally African and his mom was literally American. Like, he's one of the few people I can not actually call African-American, because it makes sense. I never really deemed myself as African-American. I don't know where my roots come from. Haven't found them. Black-American? Yes. I couldn't do it otherwise. That's just me, brother. Go ahead. Please. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, just to answer the question, you know, I just feel like, you know, it shouldn't matter what athlete you are. I don't care if you're LeBron James or you're Michael Phelps. If you see injustice is wrong in itself. So it doesn't matter to me, black, white, whatever you are. If you feel the wrongness of what's happening, then speak out.
I have to challenge that because remember we talked about this a long time ago when we talked about the initial taking of the knees, and we see the backlash when the black players of the NFL did it, and some were good players, some were great players. They didn't really have as many repercussions as Colin Kaepernick did, mostly because Colin Kaepernick was the first guy to do it, so he's going to take the brunt of it. But we brought up how important it would have been and how much more serious it would have been taken had one Tom Brady had taken a knee, or Aaron Rodgers had taken a knee, or a Drew Brees had taken a knee or stood in solidarity with them. These were kind of guys who, they understood that they had respect like I do, where I would stand for the national anthem. I wouldn't necessarily take a knee, not myself personally. But it's not like that. But unlike them, I think because of just my experience growing up, because folks think that every black person's experience is the same. It's not. But my experience as a black male in America was very similar to what Colin Kaepernick was originally protesting. And so I can see and understand why others would take a knee. While I would not personally agree with it, I at least understood and I can at least get behind it and respect it. But we did bring up, if the three major white quarterbacks in the league took a knee too, that the attention to the cause would have been even greater than what it was. I mean, granted, the NFL still suffered because the combination of the protests and the election cycle in some ratings, but not so much that it was devastating. Do you think that maybe when we brought those people up, those names up, that their ratings would have suffered even more, even greater, and would they have been a greater attention to the cause that we're talking about when it came to this particular subject of police brutality at that time?
I think it'd be, again, ignorant of us to think for one second if Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers would have taken a knee, but that have brought more attention to the problem. Absolutely. Would it have taken less off of black America by all of a sudden it became the message in which it was completely misunderstood? And it went from being they were taking a knee to protest police brutality to all of a sudden now it became they were disrespecting the government and the armed forces, which it had nothing to do with. They were protesting the anthem because certain words in the anthem are supposed to be uplifted as American, and they never are. So if those guys had took a knee, absolutely, would it have added to the backlash the NFL got also? Good question. I would say yes, because you still have your middle-class Americans that were very offended by it. I know some of those middle-class Americans that refuse to watch football, call Roger Goodell all kind of names because he, quote-unquote, allowed it, like he had a – like he's their father, their judge, their jury, and their executioner. And so because of that, they stopped watching. But, again, the word that I'm trying to use today, as much as I hate the word organic in the wrestling term, I'm using the word ignorance because you have to educate yourself in sports and in politics. And not enough that you have, like I said, sit there and become a CNN debater and know what's going on in every single thing. But educate yourself enough to know what's going on socially in the politic realm. You don't have to be 100% engulfed in politics. But when certain things happen, you should be aware. Like if you're unaware in sports or as a sports fan about what took place this past weekend in Washington, D.C. when social media to the Icon Stars or ISO Rockabos, at King Baldwin, and something on Twitter, appeared at and was in that march on Washington for the gun control in this country, you need to know that much. And when you don't know that much, when you're sitting here boycotting the NFL because you see blacks taking knees and you have no reason what it's for and you make up your own conclusion, then you're ignorant to the cause. And you're the bigger problem to the country more than the problem it is, in my opinion.
No, I mean, but I believe what your opinion is rooted in some factual evidence, because there's it's so easy to get wrapped up in just where your side is as far as what side of the argument you want to argue on, that you miss the other things that could be a part of it that can help you understand the other side's point of view. And there's a lot of times where those facts and figures, like, for example, when I heard Colin Kaepernick speak for the first time, already knew what he was missing, in my opinion. I already knew what he was missing and what he was not articulate in, because I already understood the stuff that was going on prior to him protesting. I was already hip to the fact. And because I was asking these questions, especially with the situation that started the whole recent movement when it came to Black Lives Matter, was the whole Michael Brown situation. When I studied in depth what was going on in that case, the people who was involved, how President Obama and Eric Holder at the time were involved and making sure they were trying to find justice in the case and the results. When I heard Colin mention his name, I knew he was speaking out of ignorance because he didn't do his due diligence. Because you got to make sure that when you speak, in my opinion, when you speak, you need to do some sort of due diligence when you have that level of platform, in my opinion. Now, granted, we got a guy who I call Darth Orange. He got a platform and he don't do his due diligence at all. So, but the standard for him, I'm not worried about his standard. I'm worried about the standard for our folks when we want to make an effect change for our community. And I think our standards should be so high that they can't deny what we do and what we say, because it'll be rooted in facts and evidence, and it's not just going to be, well, I feel this way because I'm brown. No, I don't feel this way because I'm brown. I have factual evidence to back up why this is. And it makes it worse because I'm brown, you dumb jack. Anyway, we got Wally Wild on. You know, bring him in on the conversation. Wally Wild, we're sitting there having a conversation here about sports versus politics. Is there room for both? You know, I feel that there's room for both. I feel like the way it's delivered to the audience has a lot to do with whether or not a message will be, you know, accepted or not. You know, Mike Knox is like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your name. Excuse me. I have a rock moment sometimes. Every time I say it doesn't matter. I have no idea why I have a rock moment every time I get to that. But, you know, it shouldn't matter how it's delivered, because you're supposed to respect it anyway because of the country that we live in, things like that. Where do you fall on sports versus politics? Because there's a lot of people who don't want their politics mixed with sports. They just want their sports to stay sports so they can enjoy and get the release from the crap that they have to deal with in the political realm. Because there's some politics and social issues they're uncomfortable to talk about. Wally, where do you fall on that?
I mean, well, one thing, you're not responsible if you're an athlete or a celebrity or whatever. You're not responsible to, you know, to speak out on something that you don't feel comfortable speaking out on. But at the same time, if you are comfortable in sending a message or speaking out on a particular topic or subject matter, then that should be respected. I think, you know, sports and politics can go hand in hand depending on the individual. And to talk about, and for me, like, regardless of what side you're on or whatever, as long as it's like writing, I always put it to a point, it's like writing a paper, right? Writing an essay. When you write an essay, your professor or your teacher will tell you, like, your point is only as good as, you know, what you can prove within that point, right? You know what I mean? So you have to back up your argument. So to an athlete, regardless of whatever point, I mean, whatever they stand upon or whatever, as long as you can back up your argument with facts, then I'm fine with it. You know what I mean? You should always back up anything with facts. So I never like break. I'm not against anybody talking about something. I'm only against somebody talking about something without anything factual to back it up. So people like Cap or whoever, you know, once they have an argument that has some factual context to it, I'm okay with it. Like, because again, we're all speaking about your own opinion. And at the end of the day, it's your opinion about what's going on. It's your opinion, but it's about how you back it up factually. You know what I mean? So you have an element of facts to it, that's fine. And then when somebody comes back with you with a rebuttal, as long as you have a factual stance on that, then that's okay. Because for some strange reason, we've gone to the realm of not being factual. We've gone to it in terms of society. You can say BS all you want, and people take that as the gospel. As long as you break it down factually in terms of any issue we have in this country, you break it down factually, then we all can listen to it.
Well,
do you think that, especially with this past weekend? Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. I was just curious. This past weekend, man. And, you know, and I've been seeing it ever since the situation happened in Parkland. I personally will not mention the buzzer's name, and I personally not mention if I had visual, I would never show his face. I don't know why the media continues to glorify these people in that way. That's how you create more. There's actually been a factual study that's been done by psychiatrists who study all these shootings. And every time you mention the idiot's name and every time you show the person's face, it inspires more people to want to do that.
Agreed.
That's the meaning of life they're looking for. So, and for those, CNN, Fox News, all of y'all buzzers up in there who control the most of the media, stop showing his face and stop saying his name. Anyway, so we saw two things happen in these last 3 weeks. We saw something happen in Parkland where someone didn't do – where a lot of things didn't happen, but they blamed the object that was used in it. And there's some other facts that's been coming out that supposedly that object wasn't even used. It was a handgun, supposedly. And then of course, we had recently happening in your neck of the woods in the DMV where there was someone who was told on being broken up with a girl, and, you know, he got stopped. He got stopped before he can do real damage because there was a good guy with a gun who did his job before he can actually do some things. So there's those two sides to that. Very vitriolic, very, very adamant sides. People throwing shade here and there, not using any facts. I thought that march, and I'm going to be honest with you, I thought that march was devoid of facts. I thought that march was devoid of actual facts. It was backed up and propped up by people who have a specific agenda against the ability for me to protect myself as a person. Now, and here's the thing. We always talk about racism in America, right? You ever notice? This is me. I think it's racist for a bunch of people who don't own a weapon or who never experienced owning a weapon to tell me that it's ineffective for me as a black man in America to protect myself from horrible law enforcement officers and possible criminals who may seek to take my life unjustly. They're telling me that I can't protect myself. Now, that's just me, in my opinion. That's one little notch on a several different layer of discussion that I have when it comes to that topic. But I don't want nobody telling me that I can't protect myself or that, you know, or that they feel like the level at which I choose to protect myself is not becoming because they don't agree with it. Like, well, I mean, I go to a buffet and eat 10 plates. It's not healthy for me, but that ain't your business.
But I think that's a slippery slope.
Go ahead, Mike.
I think that's a slippery slope as far as it pertains to what's actually going on and how they're doing it and what the NRA and them trying to – with the gun laws. There's so much going on right now. We got the gun laws going on with what happened in Parkland. And I'm not going to forget the young brother, Stephen Clark, who got shot in the back 22 times by the police and 20 times by the cops in the back of all places in his grandparents' backyard. It's these things just have to stop all around. It starts up top, and it will trickle itself down. And, of course, what you guys have said, touching and showing these guys' faces and plastering their names, and it becomes, oh, I want to up top that guy, and the things that happened in Orlando with the post-nightclub situation and things like this, the stuff that happened in Las Vegas. At this point in this country, and as a black man, I don't feel safe around the police. And as a human being, I don't feel safe in this country sometimes going places. It doesn't matter at this point. Yes, if you're black, you have a target on your back. But now you can just be somewhere minding your business, having a good time. What if, you know, God forbid, Wally, who is very sociable, goes out and some idiot decides, I'm going to shoot up the Big Kip concert. Like, for what reason do you have to do these type of things? And so until we get a better hold on these gun laws, I do have a problem with it. I think you should have a right to protect yourself at all times. But I think the law should be steeper on who they let have these things. If you can go into my background when I'm trying to apply to get a job somewhere, and you can go with my background 7 to 10 years to make sure that I'm not a criminal for something that someone may have done in their 20s, and now that person may be in their 30s, then you should be able to look that hard to allow someone to get a gun and to buy bullets. And I take the joke and being serious in what I believe it was, I know it was, I'm trying to get his name but I might have right now. Help me out. Pookie, New Jack City, can't get his name. Help me out. Chris Rock said, guns don't kill people. Stupid mother effers with guns kill people. If you raise the price of these damn bullets, then people wouldn't be getting killed so many places. If so many things can be in place. And so, yeah, they're athletes. LeBron James, I respect that brother who's speaking out the way that LeBron James speaks out. And more athletes like LeBron James. To me, the NBA is the only sports league that speaks out like this. And to me, every other athlete in this country is afraid to speak out. And until more of them speak out, it needs to be heard. We need to hear, as you mentioned earlier, so I'm going to repeat those names, the Tom Brady, the Drew Brees of the world. Only time we hear from Drew Brees is when there was a damn hurricane in New Orleans. What about all the shootings and all the deaths that happened in New Orleans since he's been there? I haven't heard him come out of it against none of those things. So until these other predominantly white and bigger superstars, and or not bigger than LeBron, LeBron's probably the biggest superstar in this country, but up there with him, your Tiger Woods, your Tom Brady of the world, come out and talk, then his problem would not be heard from every level, in my opinion, the way it should be heard, Wallace.
No, I mean, to me, it just, as long as you feel comfortable in your character to do it, like, you know, do it. If you're not comfortable, then don't do it. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. Because, all right, let's go into the simplest things. Like, you have people in this world who are scared of public speaking, right? Like, they're scared to speak in front of people in terms of doing this, like a presentation or a speech or whatnot. I'm not going to throw them under there and say, hey, you need to do a speech. Like, you need to. Because it's not in your comfort zone. It's not you. It's not your personality. Now, you can do other things in the background and fund charitable donations and things of that sort, you know what I mean, because that's more in your comfort zone. So I try not to, because when Barkley and Jordan and all of them didn't do anything, I used to question, like, thoroughly and be like, well, why? How come you don't do X, Y, Z? Like, Jim Brown has shown you the platform. And then as I got older, I understood, like, you know what? So it's not in certain people's, you know, comfort zone. Not to say it's right or wrong, it's not in their comfort zone. So I try not to like get on like certain athletes for not doing it, because again, it's not in their comfort zone. Now Drew Brees is a good point, because Drew Brees was a guy that you know that was talking a lot during, you know, what happened with Katrina and whatnot.
Right.
And you know, New Orleans has a big crime rate. Period. And you don't hear Drew Brees talking about things of that sort. So that's a good point, because that's a guy who his comfort zone to speak out.
Right.
Exactly. It wasn't his comfort zone to speak out about.
Did he come out
when
his old teammate Will Smith died? Did he say anything about gun violence when his teammate Will Smith died?
I mean,
he died protecting himself, but I don't remember him coming out when that happened.
I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know. But that's a good point. Like, Drew Brees is a good point because he's shown you that he's willing to speak out on certain things. Like, he's shown you. But, like, Jordan has been really consistent. Barkley has been really consistent in terms of where they stand within all that. Does that make them a terrible person because they don't speak out on certain issues? I don't think so. You know what I mean? I'm not, you know, I'm speaking as a guy who's not the biggest Jordan fan, but it doesn't make him the worst person in the world because he doesn't speak out on particular issues.
347-637-3859. Let's go ahead before we got out of here and change the subject a little bit, lighten it back up, because it is about sports, and sports is about getting away sometimes. And a lot of fans still feel the way to get away from some of the real life troubles of the day, and so they dive into sports. Micah spoke about it earlier as well. I'd like to hear from you. You're a Michigan fan. What's up with the other
I'm a Hoyas fan
coming out?
I'm a Hoyas fan.
I apologize, but you're a Michigan football fan. So that means you don't rock with Michigan basketball in no shape, form, or fashion?
No, you know, I like Michigan basketball because of the Fab Five.
Because
of
the Fab
Five,
we all got a little
Michigan in it. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah,
right.
Of course,
so today the video comes out. Mike Greenberg of ESPN Show Starts came out today. Get Up, and on Get Up, an older lady, 101 years old from Michigan, said to Sister Jean, "We're coming for you." As Michigan will now play Loyola in the Final Four. And I just love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I asked you the question there, starting with you, Wally. Loyola or Michigan, who has the best story? Not the one. We're going to talk about the winner on Friday, because on Friday we were now turning to bet that segment until we have our own Vegas handicapper, bookie extraordinaire, coming in on Friday. I got all the stuff planned. Coming on Friday, he will be here and joining us every Friday to give us the prop bet for WrestleMania coming up and for the Final Four. So we're going to have him on Friday's show. But going into this game, who you think has the best? Because to me, Loyola is the best story that I've seen in a tournament, even bigger than George Mason a couple years back.
That's a close one, because George Mason, that was a nice run. Loyola, Maryland, because there's a Loyola, Maryland, too.
When I first heard Loyola, I didn't even know they existed. I don't know where they're from because it said Chicago in the name. Other than that, I know nothing about this university. To me, their storyline is pretty cool.
You're looking at a team. And the thing about it is, if folks did their research, and I didn't, because I'm not going to lie, like, I watch Loyola Chicago. I've never watched them at all. But if you look at, you know, their resume coming into the tournament, their winning streak was ridiculous. I believe they finished the season 30-5.
They haven't lost
obviously
January 17th.
Yeah, so obviously they have a winning mentality. You know what I mean? So you got to you could also say that they were misseeded as an 11th seed. They were misseeded having that type of run, and I believe they're in the Missouri Valley Conference, which is historically.
Well,
have we
not seen schools?
Yeah. From that conference,
ranked that high though from that conference.
You got no. You can get some an 8-9, which is more of at least a nine. I won't say they should be lower than that, but a 9, especially in the Missouri Valley Conference, has been one of the better mid-major conferences in college basketball. Period. It's a low. If you want to be honest, in terms of the top conferences in college basketball, it's a step lower than the big time conferences. A step lower. That conference has brought in big time college teams, college basketball teams in terms of producing in the tournament. So, like, having that type of resume in that conference, arguably you could say they were misseeded. And if you watch their style of basketball, what they've done in this tournament, you could tell that team is well coached. Probably one of the better coached teams in college basketball. Just from watching them play in this run. I mean, I feel like if you compare coaches, what that guy is doing is only rivals what Wichita State coach does in Marshall, Greg Marshall, in terms of his play design and what he's come up with, dribble handoff, setting up 3-point shots, weak side motion. So when I look at what that team has done in this tournament and what the way they've been coached, I think they're the best story.
Micah, you've been here. You served here. Looking at the other end, when you saw the two blue bloods go at it yesterday, Kansas and Duke, I mean, it goes down to overtime. You finally get the winner here. Me being a Duke hater, I'm cool with this. Do the winner of Kansas, Villanova, are they automatically your winner, in your opinion, to win the national title, the winner of that semifinal game? But I think Loyola Chicago would have a chance if they played Villanova.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I agree. Look, Wally's pointed out everything and why they've been successful up to this point. I think that a lot of part of their road has been pretty easy in comparison. I did not expect them I'm just saying, Loyola. Talk about Loyola. Loyola. I think one of the hardest ones was Tennessee. And you know, and they got past them. I thought Nevada was going to be playing on emotional E, but they didn't, and they got past them. Cool, great, fantastic. When they played Kansas State, I didn't expect Kansas State to put up a fight because I thought Kansas State was winning over Kentucky was fluky. I didn't think Kansas State had the talent level to actually beat Loyola because I thought Loyola was a better basketball team than Kansas State. So when my bracket got destroyed already, I was like, oh, so Kentucky lost. That was my national champion after Virginia lost. And I said, okay, I'm going Loyola on this one. But I don't think they played the talent level of Michigan. I think Michigan is going to have a little bit too much for them. I think that Michigan is going to take care of business, and they're going to get beat by Villanova. And I'm not going to use what the double network four-letter, just messing. What they talk about, you know, recent history has dictated that the winner of Kansas and Villanova is going on to win the championship. That may be the case, but I think that the maturity level and the team chemistry, and you know, Bill Self has done a fantastic job with coaching this particular team this year. You know, I believe that teams in NCAA tournaments and the cohesiveness of those teams always win. And Villanova, I believe, outside of Loyola, has the most cohesive team. And you know, whether Loyola gets past Michigan or not, they're not getting past Villanova. Because Villanova is going to show Kansas that unlike what they played against Duke, they're going to play a real team, and they're going to play a real team. Who don't need to trip you up or do anything dirty to you to beat you. They're going to beat you straight up, and they're going to beat you with strong defense. When you get Duke, you got to hate on the guys.
Can I jump into that one thing about that one guy that you just referred to, that one guy who tends to be dirty. I think it's amazing that he got the last shot in regulation over Bagley. I thought that was amazing. I thought, like, this game is tied.
Amazing, that's Coach K.
The ball to the last shot. I thought that was amazing. I thought, like, knowing that they couldn't stop Bagley down low and anytime batting a guy touches, he was getting fouled or they was getting a double team that you thought, Coach K, like you thought, and I don't know if Coach K threw it up. I don't know if Coach K was like, hey, take the shot. But I thought it was amazing that you had arguably the best player in the country, definitely the best player remaining in the tournament, and he didn't get a touch down stretch. I thought that was amazing. I thought like,
well, I mean, they want to blame that they kind of slowed him down. They want to put it on that they kind of slowed him down during the game. But I'm sorry, I thought at the biggest moments you rely on the biggest players.
Or your best player.
Grayson Allen, and while he's cool,
I'm sorry, I'm just saying this though. Let me just say this as devil's advocate. Okay, just as devil's advocate.
Okay, sure.
I don't think you could have lost either way. I get everything you're saying, Wally, and I thought the same thing to be fair, right? That Bagley, no one all year has been able to stop him when he's gotten the ball in the right position.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, though, Grayson Allen, y'all didn't want to say his name, you know, that guy who shoots people and trips people and butt pumps people and all that good kind of stuff. He does take and make big shots, and he is a shooter.
Yeah, when they set shots, though. When they set shots, I agree. When they set shots, he makes great set shots. That wasn't a set shot moment, and he was being defended well throughout the whole game. I believe it was 3 for 13 throughout that game. It's like you're going, and at that point, I think it was 2 for something. At that point, you're going to Grayson Allen, who's not even doing anything, who Bagley was getting buckets, and Bagley at that point in time, they couldn't even stop him going left. He was going right shoulder easy, and they couldn't stop him. The only way you could stop Bagley at that point is a double team. You got one. Look, if you're down one, I can almost get you. Like if you're down one, you take whatever you could take. But it's a tied game. So whatever happens, you're going to overtime. Why not put yourself in the best situation to win the game? Why not just give your man, the best player on the floor, let's be real, the best player on the floor, the ball, to win the game? You're going, and you could have went, truth be told, if it wasn't Bagley, you could have went to Carter because they wasn't even stopping Carter in that stretch down low for easy dunks and going to the basket. So you had two players you could go to, but you decided to go to Grayson Allen because he's a senior.
I love the questioning of Coach K.
I'm just saying. I'm honest. Like I'm thinking the game is over. I'm literally thinking, oh, they're over. They're going to Bagley. I said that they're going to Bagley. This game is over. And then when I saw that Allen basically wanted to go ISO, when I saw him setting up ISO, I was like, oh shoot, oh he's trying to take the shot. Oh, okay. God bless Coach K on that one. God bless him.
347-637-359. Like I said, we're going to get out of here relatively soon here. A lot of things going on here at my end personally. Micah, thank you for holding it down while I was making my way to be able to even call in as I am right now. Just a lot of things going on around the Knox household and moving further. 10 days, despite all the badness that's been going on, I will be on an airplane going to New Orleans for WrestleMania. So I'm excited about that. So speaking of that, going to WrestleMania, real fast, Micah, tonight's Raw, not the go-home show, that is next week. Will we get the answer from The Undertaker tonight, yes or no? Does Undertaker make an appearance, or does WWE wait until next week to decide about him and Cena moving forward?
Gosh, I hope so. Because, I mean, John Cena's wrestling Kane tonight, and that's about as exciting as watching lead paint dry.
Listen,
I mean,
he's going to beat Kane to a bloody pulp and force Undertaker to come out. That's what I think. I think you're going to get heel Cena tonight beating Kane dead. That one right there. So
you just said heel Cena?
Heel Cena. I said it. Well, it's that's why I rephrased what I said. But if you look at the approach they've taken with Cena to call on Undertaker, those have been heelish things, calling out his kid, calling out his wife, calling him by his name. Those are technically heel tactics. Okay.
He called out
Cena will never be full. He called it. He said, you know, you're on Instagram with your children and doing this and other. Come fight me like a man. So,
He posted workout videos on your wife's Instagram.
Cena, he a rapper again? He going ham?
No, he's not. He's not the cool Thuganomics character. He got that Thuganomics. Like Mike said, Mike, you were right when you said it. He got killed by The Rock. You can't. Once The Rock pretty much called him out. The Rock took a golden shovel. I mean, he took an HH level golden shovel to the Thuganomics character.
He said, while in case you missed it, you come at The Rock, The Rock's a grown ass man. You don't rap to The Rock. It was over right there. So Dr. Thugonomics will never return. If he does, I'm quite sure the crowd will remind him boots to acid. But ask this question for the guy here when we go to Best and Worst of the Weekend, and that's this much. Has the Ronda Rousey experience died down? I was once hyped on the Ronda Rousey train. I'm still hyped on the Ronda Rousey train. I love the fact that there's so much going on at WrestleMania right now. She's not the focal point in which it seems that it was going to be. It's still a huge – with her on the card with Daniel Bryan, potentially Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, and this, to me, this card on paper is arguably one of the greatest WrestleMania cards of all time. I think Ronda is still hot, and I think the fact that all these other things that are taking place that are becoming bigger than her in a sense makes it easier for her to perform. In the words of Champ Creed, Ronda always has a history of choking in big moments, from the Olympics to Holly Holmes to Nunes. So, has, in your opinion, Micah, has Ronda Rousey's fire been drenched a little bit towards going to WrestleMania?
No, I think they protected her very well up to this point as far as just putting her on the microphone, making sure that she was comfortable, giving her spots where she could put her hands on somebody. She, you know, goes from that smiling, happy girl that happened to be here to, oh crap, I'm about to get got. You know, they've done what they needed to do. I personally wish there was a squash match of some kind before WrestleMania, just so that we can see her with some in-ring. And, you know, you can give her somebody that, you know, give her Alicia Fox. I mean, just someone who you know is there to get beat up. I personally find her attractive. I think she's very athletic. She has a nice athletic body, and I like athletic built ladies.
But she gotta get got, man.
She gotta get got, yo. I mean, Alicia Fox is the squash, and she's the one you squash. Not no local person like Nia Jackson squash. No, you actually gotta squash somebody who means something. Because at least Alicia Fox will come up in there, talking up all her face, making it nice and selling. You know, slap her, and then you know she go from, then she puts it on her. You know, so. She had wrestled one time before WrestleMania, just so that people can, Stephanie's gonna get it. You know, it would have kind of built it, but it's been kind of meh. And I think that's a good thing. Like you said, the expectations for her personally, for her part of the show, is not high, and that's a good thing for her, especially for her first match to be on the freaking grandest stage of them all. I think that's positive for her.
Worst of the weekend, people. You know what happens. This is when we get hyped or we get sick. Cool. So you never forget. Cool. 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 Cool.
So that's how I've been sounding all these years. I finally took a chance to listen to you for the studio. Anyway, that's the rest of the weekend. Michael, for you.
All right, best of the weekend was me not doing anything on Sunday and spending the QT that you always need to with your family. And, you know, I really enjoyed kicking back and not having to do anything. That was the best of the weekend because sports-wise, my bracket still sucked. Okay, and there's another best of the weekend, too. In honor of this song that we play every time we play the best around, guess what series on YouTube is coming out? Cobra Kai! Woo! That trailer got me hyped. It's coming in. Cobra Kai! Worst of the weekend is always my bracket.
I've seen that since November.
No.
Coming out. But glad you finally
I just saw it, okay? I'm late to the party.
That's fine.
Darn it.
Best of the weekend for me was Loyola Chicago still moving on and strong. Worst of the weekend for me was, on a personal note, guess what, people? They tried to blame me for the fire. Wally, best of the worst of the weekend for you.
Oh, wow. Best of weekend for me, I'm with you, Loyola Chicago, getting to the Final Four is a great story. Worst of the weekend, watch the Redskins told Junior Gillette that they probably won't be needing his services for next season, so he's they won't try to pursue him and bring him back. So that's the worst of the weekend.
People, with that being said, listen, do not wake up tomorrow morning and say to yourself, I love me some me and don't love God. We out of here, y'all.
This is the Shoulder Sports, hosted by Mike Knox. It's barbershop talk, still we think outside the box. We take it to the hoop, y'all be trying to find your shot. Sports talk, the best on the dial when it's time to rock. We talking football, baseball, boxing, any sports you can name. Keep your radios locked in. Listen, you can get the scoop on all your top 10. Mike Knox, Shoulder Sports, we keep it hot, man.
If you're not down with